our scripture reading for today, and it is tied to our kind of Mother's Day service theme, though it doesn't seem very obvious and very clear through the story, but it is something that I think is important in the way that we live our lives, the way that we interact with others, and the way that we view God and relate with God as well. So listen now to the word of God. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine." He's talking about Goliath. "Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, "You are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine." Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. "I cannot go in these," he said to Saul, "because I am not used to them." So he took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, approached the Philistine. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Now I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, what does David and Goliath have to do with Mother's Day? There is no mention of a mother anywhere. It is a battle scene. It is a fight. You know, there's tension in the air. It's about violence. It's about war. So what could we possibly be talking about in this story between David, Saul, and Goliath? As you may or may not know, we are doing a Bible study series on kings versus prophets, and so I'm doing kind of a deep dive and an investigation into the book of Samuel, the book of Kings, the book of Chronicles, rereading some of the prophetic books, and preparing material and preparing Bible studies each week. And in doing so, I came upon the story of David and Goliath, and it's one that almost everybody knows about. If you spent time in church, if you went, even for a brief period of time to Sunday school, the story of David and Goliath is one that's so widely known. Even my friends who do not profess faith, they're not Christians, they even know and will reference David and Goliath. David and Goliath is, just a mainstay in pop culture. Everybody knows that reference. In any kind of sporting event, when there's a big underdog, when there's a big favorite, they always call it the David and Goliath. They always refer it to that sort of analogy. And, it is a little bit of an odd place to be preaching about this scene and about the things that were said, the things that were done, and what ultimately happens through this story on Mother's Day, when we're supposed to be thinking about our moms and the tender love and the giving birth and rearing a child and, training a child and stuff like that. But, I read this story, and believe it or not, reading this story and hearing some of the things that were spoken, it reminded me of my mom. It reminded me of the way that my mom was to me at a young age. And I knew that Mother's Day was coming up, you know, and sometimes you get lost in the hoopla of what am I going to buy? What am I going to gift? What am I going to do to, you know, celebrate Mother's Day? What are the expectations of me? And I'm notoriously bad at that kind of stuff. But I did spend a lot of my week thinking about my mom, thinking about the type of mother that she was, the type of love that she gave me, the things that she taught me, the things that she said to me in my moments of despair, when I was going through a hard time, when I was suffering through grief, when I was, you know, disenchanted with my circumstances and the life that I was living, some of the things that she advised me, some of the things that she said to me, some of the things that she said to reassure me. And thinking about my mom, the way that she is to me even today, the way that she's always been with me ever since I was young, thinking about how brave she was, how strong she was, that she truly did love me with a very fierce love, very protective, and at the same time so supportive, wanting me to be me, loving me for me. When I was young, I share this quite often, but you know, I had a pretty bad temper. I had issues with authority figures. I didn't like listening to people. I tended to act up, and in a lot of ways, I was a little bit disrespectful. I was kind of angry. I used my words in ways that would make people feel really bad. And looking back, I think about some of the things that I said even to like my Sunday school teachers and my Bible study teachers, and it's some shocking stuff. I should never have said those kind of things. Hopefully they forgave me. Hopefully they forgive me. And I remember that I would get in trouble a lot. I got in trouble a lot as a kid because I was so disrespectful and I did so many things that were just outside of the norm in a Korean family. I didn't like to listen. I didn't respect my elders. I was mean to my sister. I did all kinds of stuff that deserved a lot of punishment. And because of that, I got disciplined by my father a lot. I got yelled at a lot. I got, you know, different ways of discipline, all kinds of ways. I think my parents were just thinking, how can we, you know, raise this child to not be a menace to society? And they, you know, used every method that they could think of. And it was a very difficult period of time, you know, in my relationship with my parents, because everything that I did seemed to disappoint them or hurt them or anger them. And, you know, I wasn't sure why I was this way. I didn't know why I wanted to be so rebellious or why I acted out so much. There were times and there were moments where I tried to be a better person and tried to, you know, change my behavior, because I realized when you are good, you receive a little bit more love, a little bit more affirmation, a little bit more encouragement. You hear nicer words and nicer compliments when you are a good person. And one of the difficult things for me was I longed for that. I wanted that. I craved that. But I wasn't great at being a good kid. I was more mischievous. I wanted to cause trouble. I was a little bit more adventurous. I was always pushing boundaries. And so a lot of my interactions with my parents ended up being kind of rebuke, correction, a lot of teaching, a lot of nagging, a lot of lectures, a lot of discipline. And I thought to myself that I had a very complicated relationship with my parents. But thinking back on my childhood, thinking back especially on my mom, I must have broken her heart so many times when I caused trouble. They wanted me to be the good kid. They wanted me to be the nice boy in Sunday school who answered all the questions and knew all the memory verses, and every time, you know, they would get a report back from the Sunday school teachers, and they would say, "He was a terror. He was so terrible today. Please do something about him." And I'm sure it disappointed them. I'm sure it hurt them. But never once in my childhood did I ever question my mom's love for me. I knew that I would disappoint her. I knew that she was angered sometimes by the way that I acted. But never once did I wonder if my mom loved me. And this all kind of came to a big conclusion or a big kind of reconciliation when we were kind of at our worst period of time together. You know, we had been fighting almost every day. I stopped talking to my mom for long periods of time. I would go on these like semi-hunger strikes and not eat the food that she cooked, you know, just to make a statement about how disgruntled I was at her as a mom. We were in like a very difficult period. And it was in kind of that period of time that we ended up going on a family trip to Korea, in which I didn't even want to go. And I shared this before, but on that plane ride, you know, I sat next to my mom. And when you are on a plane for 14 hours, you can't ignore each other the whole time. I mean, I tried for the first hour and the first 2 hours, but you end up talking. And we ended up spending so much time discussing our history together. Thinking back on childhood, thinking back on all of the memories, on all of the trips, on all of the things that we did, all the birthday parties, all of the times that my mom helped me with my homework, all of the times that she did all the graphics and all the art for my science projects. The times that she would try to quiz me and help me study for spelling quizzes. You know, someone who didn't have English as her first language, trying to help me, you know, with my homework and prepare me for tests at school, even though she was busy, even though she was tired. And we looked back and we just traced our history together. We discussed things and we said, how have we gotten to this point where we're not speaking? And while sitting in that plane and talking with my mom and trying to hash things out, reconciling, forgiving each other, talking about the good moments, talking about misunderstandings, clearing up some of the things that I thought were unfair, and seeing her perspective and understanding that so much of what she did for me, so much of what she said to me, was done out of love. Knowing and finally hearing about the countless hours of prayer, the amount of tears that she shed for me as she pleaded to God and prayed to God for my future, for my well-being. And I remember my mom and looking back and realizing on that airplane, my mom has always loved me. My mom has known who I am. And who I am seems to anger her sometimes, and it's disappointing sometimes. I don't meet every standard, I don't meet every expectation. My mom wanted me to be a violin player, and I resisted that with all of my being. I did everything to sabotage her desire for me to play violin. And when I finally gave it up, and when she finally gave up, I was happy, she was sad. I didn't always do what she wanted me to do. But she always loved me for who I was. She always accepted me as I was. She never stopped being my mom. She was proud of me. Even though I'm sure there were times where she thought to herself, why can't you be more like your friends? Why can't you be more responsible like your sister? Why can't you be more like the person that I want you to be? But my mom accepted me. And when I stopped and took a look and looked at my childhood and traced our history together, it became so clear to me. My mom was proud of who I was. My mom was encouraging who I was. My mom loved me. My mom never left my side. She never disowned me or rejected me. She loved me for me. And it's in this vein, it's in this thought, and it's along these lines that I was thinking about my mom, the mom who loves me whether, you know, I have a good day or a bad day. The mom who loves me whether I get the highest score on a test or the lowest score on a test. The mom who loves me whether I choose the profession that she wants me to choose or choose the profession that I choose. The mom who supports me and encourages me through everything. And it takes me to the story today, and seemingly might not be connected. On the surface, it seems like it's a little bit difficult to understand why I opened with a monologue about my mom. But the story today finds us in a situation in Israel's history in which they were in a dire, dire situation. It was a critical, critical juncture in Israelite history. Make no mistake about it, this was a huge threat to them as a people. The Philistines were a threat to their very well-being, to their very existence as a nation. And what it says in the previous portion, the previous part of this passage, in verse 11, it says that when Goliath was making his threats to the Israelite army, the men and Saul were terrified. We remember why Saul was chosen to be the king. What did the people say? For those of you that were in Bible study, they said, "We want Saul to be our king so that he can fight our battles. This is Saul's responsibility. Win or lose, Saul has to represent Israel. And he can't stand there and allow Goliath to slander and defile the name of God." But Saul was afraid. Saul was scared. And so they were thinking and looking all throughout the camp. He had probably had his advisors running around looking for someone that could stand up against this Goliath, who would walk down in front of everyone and say, "Bring out your best. Let's fight." Goliath was a huge person. And judging by the description of his armor, he was probably bigger and stronger than anyone that Israel had. David, who was not even part of the army, David was sent by Jesse to check on his three oldest brothers. He was just going there to give them a snack and check on their well-being, to just say, "Hey, you know, Dad's thinking about you. Good luck." David's job was to tend the sheep. He's not a soldier. He was held back because he was young. He wasn't old enough. He wasn't going to be able to contribute to this army. So he's doing kind of the domestic labor while his oldest brothers are out fighting in Saul's army. And David kind of goes and he's checking out the scene, and the Bible tells us that he sees kind of what is going on. He sees what this Goliath is doing. And he's wondering, you know, what are we going to do about this? How come no one's doing anything about this? And you know that the murmurs in the crowd had to have been along the lines of, "What is Saul doing? How come Saul is not fighting for us? Where is our king?" And David can kind of sense the fear. He can sense the terror among the people. You know, his oldest brothers are also not volunteering. They're not willing to go and fight. And David sees what's happening, and something inside of him becomes incensed. The way that Goliath is mocking the army of God, God's people, God's name. And he's thinking to himself, how can we allow this person who does not fear the Lord, who does not, you know, serve our Lord, how can we allow him to speak this way of God's people? And so little old David goes to Saul and he says, "I will fight." I'll fight him. That's a very brave and bold thing for David to do. And Saul looks at him, you know, he looks at him and he goes, what are you talking about? Hey kid, what are you talking about? That's basically Saul's response. You're not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. And you know, this is responsible on Saul's side. It's not just because David is small. It's because if they lose that fight, they know that it's going to be devastating to the morale of the Israelite army and the Israelite people. So they have to choose very carefully who they're going to send out. You understand? Like, that's the responsibility of a king. He knows that if they send out a little boy, then what does that mean for your army? What does that mean for Saul? You understand? There's so much tied to this decision. If they send out a little boy and Goliath slaughters him, this is terrible for morale for all of Israel, and everyone will question Saul's bravery, everyone will question Saul's tactics, and everyone on that battlefield will feel shame for having been stood up by a young boy who also gave his life, who then died and got slaughtered by a professional soldier. So Saul looks, and he's not just saying you're not able, he's not just saying you're not capable, he's saying I will not allow it. There's no way that you can go. What are you talking about? You're not a soldier. You're a young man. You're a young boy. He knows that he will likely lose, and he's also embarrassed at what he is sending out, who he is sending out. And David gives his kind of credentials. Hey, I fight bears. Hey, I'm willing to fight a lion. Hey, you don't know, I look like I've just been doing soft labor. I look like I've just been, you know, pampered and growing up under my father. No, that's not the life that I've lived. That's not the experience that I've had. That's not the training that I've had as a shepherd keeping my father's flock. The things that he grew up with, the things that he learned, the things that he trained, these are the things that prepare him, and he shares that with Saul. In my household, this is what I was taught. In the job that my father has given to me, the responsibility that my father has given to me, these are the things that I faced. This is my upbringing. This is who I am. This is what my parents have trained me for. I fight bears. I fight lions. I grab them by the hair. You understand what David is saying? You see me in a certain way. But my history, my past, I've been growing up, and it's been preparing me for moments such as this. I can handle this. The same way that the Lord protected me from the paw of the bear and the paw of the lion, he will also protect me and rescue me from the hand of the Philistine. Amazing words. Brave words. And Saul hears this, looks at this, and maybe partially because he doesn't want to be the one to go, he says, go and the Lord be with you. Saul's responsibility. Saul's job. Now we enter into a portion of the story that gets a little bit interesting, because Saul dresses David in his own tunic, puts a coat of armor on him, and a bronze helmet on his head. How are we supposed to read that text? How are we supposed to read this? When I was young, I read it as Saul was trying his best to equip David with the best, so that he would have his best chance to fight against Goliath. Yeah, it could be. We know from Kings and Prophets kind of the idea of Saul a little bit. And so we do get the sense that there is also something else at play, which probably is that the soldiers can't tell who's going. That the soldiers don't know and they can't see very clearly. They don't have HD close up. They don't have instant replay. They don't have 12 camera views of the main event. In fact, you know, I stood on where this battle would most likely have taken place in Israel. I stood in this place where there is a valley and there are hills surrounding it, almost like a bowl shape. And if you're standing and you're encamped, then you don't really know, you can't really see who that person is. So why does Saul dress David in his own tunic, put his own coat of armor and a bronze helmet on his head? Maybe to cover his identity. Maybe so people will think, wow, Saul is brave. Saul went. Saul fought. We're not exactly sure. Okay? Perhaps Saul did care about David's well-being and he was trying to provide him some armor because David was not a soldier. David was just wearing his shepherd gear. He was wearing what like a teenager would wear. It's like when if you would enlist in an army and you're wearing a t-shirt and some basketball shorts. And obviously they're going to give you a uniform. So there is that aspect. But there's also this aspect of Saul not doing his responsibility, but wanting credit for someone else doing what he is supposed to do. That's actually, you know, to investigate that and to preach about that is a different sermon. But the thing that I want to emphasize today is David, you know, he accepted it. He fastened on the sword over the tunic. And the Bible and the Hebrew for this is he tried walking around, not necessarily. The Hebrew is a little bit funny. It's a little bit of a joke. And it says that David walked in a circle and the armor stayed still. You understand what that image is saying? Like David had the armor on and he walked around. He didn't walk around like the tent. He walked in a circle. He walked circularly. And the armor stayed still. It's kind of, you know, he walked in a full circle around inside of that armor. And the armor didn't fit him. It wasn't who he was. It wasn't made for him. It wasn't tailored for him. So I want you to see this image. I want you to have this image inside of your minds right now of David inside of Saul's tent, in this encampment, wearing this royal armor. Things that he had never touched, things that he had never seen before, probably so expensive that he could never dream of holding something. He's wearing the royal king armor. It's the best protection. It's the best armor that money can make. You're protecting your king. It's the best equipment. And in Saul's mind, perhaps it's the best chance that David has to win. You can't send him in with like a stick. You have to give him the sword. You have to give him the best equipment to make it so that he can have a chance at victory. And David fastened the armor around him, walked in a circle, and the armor stayed still. He was not able to move around in that armor. And David says to Saul, "I can't go in this. I'm not used to this." You understand? I understand that this is the best stuff. I understand that this is what the expectation of me would be as a soldier. I have to look the part. I have to have the right gear. And of course, I should have a sword. I should have an armor. I should have a bronze helmet. These are things that help me. It's the expectation that Saul has of a soldier. How can I make you successful? How do we have a chance at winning this? You need the best stuff. You need to be a soldier. You need to be strong. You have to have things that will protect you. But David said, "This is not for me. This is not me. I can't go in these. I'm not used to them." And so he took them off. And what does he choose? David stays true to who he is, what he has been equipped with, what he has done, what he has used as his tools throughout his life, in his experiences, in his circumstance, in his environment, the things that are best for him. He took a staff in his hand because he's a shepherd. He chose 5 smooth stones from the stream and put it in his shepherd's bag with a sling. Because that's what shepherds hold. Would it have been more majestic for David to ride into that army, into that battle, with a bronze helmet, with a coat of armor, with the royal insignia attached to it, glistening in the sun? Yeah, perhaps. And maybe it would have been a very proud moment for everyone watching to see David in the royal robes. But David said, "This is not what I've been trained as. This is not what I am used to. This is not what life has put me through. This is not what the experiences that I've had in my life have prepared me for." And he trades the sword for a staff. And he trades in all of that armor for a shepherd's bag, and he's wearing his own clothes. And he goes with 5 smooth stones from the stream. Puts a sling in his other hand and approaches the Philistine. You know, so often when we think about our parents and the way they raise us, we are sure that they do have expectations. We are sure that they have hopes for us, that they have dreams for us. But also, we need to understand that we were raised a certain way. We were created to be ourselves. God, as our parent, has made us in a way so that we can be successful with who we are, with the things that we are comfortable with. You were not created to be someone else. Saul dressed David. And in that way, you can even see this as Saul masked David. Saul disguised David. But one thing is very clear, and one thing you need to know: David was not created to be Saul. David was created and raised to be David. You were not created to be someone else. You were not created to walk in the shoes of someone else. You are not created to carry the armor and the sword of someone else. Sometimes the expectation of the world, and sometimes, you know, we think we have to be someone. We have to be a certain way. I wish I was like that person. I wish that I could be more like that person. But you were created as you. You were given the parents. You were given the circumstance. You were given the experience of in your life to prepare you for you, to be you. There is only one you, and you have to be you. This is so important for us to understand in terms of identity. David went through a lot. Did he want to be a shepherd? I don't know if he wanted to be a shepherd, but all his experiences of being a shepherd prepared him for this moment. His encounters with the lion, his encounters with the bear, do you think he wanted that for his life? You think he wanted to be in that circumstance? Maybe he thought, why couldn't I grow up in a rich family where I don't have to be a shepherd, where I don't have to be in danger? Why do I have to learn these skills? Why do I have to grow up with these kinds of responsibilities? God made you. God created you. He has a plan for you. There's a purpose for you. And you are the only one that can do that plan. You were the only one that was created that way. And so you have to be comfortable with who you are. You have to stay true to who you are. See, that's exactly what David is doing here. He's saying, I understand that this armor is very expensive. I understand that this sword is very light and very sharp. But can I have my staff? I'm going to take this off now. I can't be who you want me to be. I have to be myself. I have to be me. And when I am me, God is with me. I'm going to be me because I don't trust in the armor. I don't trust in the sword. I trust in who God made me as, and I trust that he is with me. You do not have to be someone else. You do not have to model your life after anyone else. God is with you. God has been with you. In all of the difficulties of life, God has been with you, and he's put you through difficult circumstances because he's training you, he's raising you, he's hardening you. He's preparing you for endurance, with patience, with strength, perseverance. And David takes off that armor, and that's such a significant moment to say, I can't go in these. You know, that's kind of a ridiculous thing to say to a king as well. I cannot go in these. I'm not used to this. Be comfortable with the way that your parents have raised you, with who you are. You are a reflection of your parents. It's true genetically. You look like them. You're going to talk like them. You think like them sometimes. You are like them. I can see it, you know, even in the way that, you know, I interact with you guys. I can see your parents in you sometimes. That's not something to be ashamed of. That's not something to try to run away from. Those are all important things. Those are all moments in which God is saying, you are my chosen person. You are a beloved child. I made you this way, and you experienced what you experienced. You were placed in that family. You have the mom that you have. You have the dad that you have, because I want you to be proud of who you are. I want you to live the life that I've given to you and accept that life and then use that life for whatever purpose I have in front of you. You are uniquely created. And you are uniquely challenged and tasked with something that God needs you to do in this world. And so we do not need to go around trying to be other people. I hate myself. I want to change myself. I wish that I wasn't me. David would not have been able to get through this circumstance if he was trying to think, I don't want to be me. No, he said, for me to get through this, I have to be me. I have to call upon my life experiences. I have to call upon the things that I'm comfortable with, the things that I've learned, the things that I've grown up with. Me. I have to be me. Took his staff, 5 stones. It must have looked crazy. It must have looked nuts. This little boy with no armor, carrying a shepherd's little bag along his side with stones in them, and a shepherd's staff, walked out into battle against a giant, against a professional soldier, a professional killer. But David overcame that challenge. David faced that opposition. Because he knew who he was. He was comfortable with who he was. Not only that, he was confident in who he was. Who he was created to be. Who he was raised as. And he said, sorry, Saul. This armor is not for me. I cannot be what you want me to be. And I cannot be you. I must be me. When I am me, God is with me. I cannot go in these. I'm not used to them. He took them off. And there's a lot to learn from David's attitude. There's a lot to learn from the choices that David made, from his words. You each are uniquely gifted and talented, created in the way that God wanted you to be created. He has placed you in different circumstances. He's placed you in different families. He's made you go through different experiences to prepare you. And so you are supposed to be proud of that. You are supposed to be comfortable with that. You have to be confident in who you are. God, the Creator, had a plan. He didn't just make you randomly. He had a plan for you. And so in this life, you know, a lot that's influenced by social media, by pop culture, telling you that you're not good enough. Our God in heaven, for sure, tells you that you are worthy. That you are worthy of glory in this world. That you are worthy of His Son. That you are worthy of His love. That you are worthy of His presence to guide you and lead you through the obstacles of life. But your responsibility, and the thing that will make your mom proud, is to be who you are, to love who you are, to commit yourself to who you are. Take the staff in your hand instead of the sword. Not what others want, not what others expect. Be you. Be proud of who you are. Be comfortable with who you are. Be confident in who you are, for the Lord is with you. Not when you are a certain way, He is with you because you are His child. This last image is the one that I want you to have of yourself, you know, when you face the difficulties of this life. David, young David, a young man, wearing regular and plain shepherd clothes. It's kind of like a movie scene where he's like walking out of a tunnel. You know, it's like dark around him and there's light and he's just like a silhouette. Has a staff in his hand. And he has his 5 stones. And he has a sling. And he just approaches the Philistine. Walking out to face the challenge. Walking out to face the biggest obstacle. The biggest threat. Because he's confident in who he is and who God has made him to be. And he's confident that God is with him. And so this Mother's Day, you know, we want to honor our moms by doing nice things for them. Honor them by being who you are. Honor them by being who you were created to be. Honor them by taking the experience and the teachings and the things that they've taught you throughout your life and being proud of who you are, comfortable in who you are, confident in who you are. You were not made, you were not called to be anyone else. David was called to be David. Saul was called to be Saul. Be proud of who you are. Know that you are valued, you are loved, and that God created you with a purpose. And in the same way that in my Sunday school service, I said, how can we honor our mothers and fathers? And the Sunday school students gave amazing answers. I'd like to suggest one to you today. More than the cards, more than the flowers, more than making them breakfast, more than finding them the perfect gift, honor your mother by being who you are, by being proud of being your mother's son, being proud of the upbringing that you had. Be who you were created to be. That is another way, and a very amazing way to honor your mothers this Mother's Day.